So I thought, right, I need someone to do my shopping. And I got, it came back that I had two people, well, two households supporting me.
Lucky.
One was my next door neighbours.
Yep.
And they did my shopping for me.
You are so lucky, Marianne. I've got to leave it there. What a great story. Thank you.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
BBC News at 2 o'clock. This is Justine Green. World leaders are continuing to pressure Israel to negotiate a ceasefire with Hezbollah at the UN General Assembly in New York. But the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has said the IDF will keep hitting Hezbollah with what he called full force. During his address to the Assembly, Keir Starmer called for an immediate ceasefire in southern Lebanon. Our diplomatic correspondent James Landale says Mr. Netanyahu is due to speak later today and all eyes are on him.
What some diplomats have noted is that Mr. Netanyahu has not thus far explicitly ruled out a ceasefire. They're drawing some hope from that. They are hoping that Mr. Netanyahu will be as pugnacious and uncompromising in public as he normally is, but in private they hope he will be more amenable and more considered. Certainly tonight the Americans and the Israelis are locked in intensive talks about this. The argument the Americans are making is that all-out war will not make northern Israel safer, but a negotiated settlement would.
The US Vice President and Democratic presidential nominee Kamala Harris has promised unwavering support for Ukraine after meeting President Zelensky in Washington. Earlier, Mr. Zelensky also met President Biden, who announced more military aid. Our correspondent Jenny Kumar is at the White House.
What we heard from Vice President Harris was that things would continue the same if she were elected, but in a swipe to her Republican rival, she said there were some in the US who wanted Ukraine to surrender, and she said it was imperative for the US and the world to fight for Ukraine's sovereignty and democracy.
A charity has said there's been a significant increase in the number of older people in England not getting the social care they need. Age UK's analysis found 2 million people over the age of 65 who didn't get enough help with daily tasks, such as washing, dressing and going to the bathroom, up from 1.6 million in 2023. The report says it's due to cuts and long NHS waiting lists. The government say they're committed to creating a high-quality national care service. The model Naomi Campbell has been banned from being a charity trustee for 5 years. Regulators found widespread financial misconduct at her anti-poverty charity Fashion for Relief. She's insisted all the money she raises goes to charity. A year to the day since the Sycamore Gap tree in Northumberland was felled, the National Trust is offering communities across the UK the chance to request 49 of its saplings. Some have already been promised to sites. One sapling will go to Tina's Haven at Easington in County Durham, a nature sanctuary created to help mothers with addictions after the death of a 35-year-old woman. Sue Robson is Tina's mother.
When Tina died, my hope died with her, and equally, you know, when that beautiful tree was cut down, you know, it was a violent, devastating act. Where the parallel came in was about those themes of hope, of nature, of recovery.
And that's the BBC News. It's 3 minutes past two.
Matt Shawley,
BBC Radio 5 Live.
We are looking for a member of Matt's Parliament for New Forest East. Mick has got a claim. Hello, Mick.
In 1997, I proposed in a little hotel. I was actually in the bathroom.
What?
We were getting ready for dinner and I wanted it all to be sort of sorted before we went in and celebrated.
Lisa and Addy, such a safe culture major as well.
We're toughening up the system to make sure that people who are unfit owners can't become football club owners.
Matt Shawley,
Monday to Friday from 2
on BBC Radio 5 Live.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of the UK.
This is our wee part of the United Kingdom.
Live from here at Old Trafford.
I think it needs a massive overhaul.
Dalton Adebayo. Listen on BBC Science.
Yeah, this is the nightclub on BBC Radio 5 Live. If you want to join in the conversation, then do. The main story we're talking about tonight is the way that the Chief Medical Officer, Professor Chris Whitty, reflects back on the pandemic, the early stages of the pandemic. He's wondering whether he, as part of the government's COVID pandemic infrastructure, overstated the severity of the pandemic, of COVID, or whether they understated it. 08085 909693. There's a jeopardy on both sides, obviously. If they overstated it, then they panicked us unnecessarily, and perhaps they brought in restrictions unnecessarily, or you know, excessively. And if they underplayed it, then maybe it contributed to a greater loss of life than it perhaps would have otherwise. Do you know? Because as I was trying to say to the last caller, the way that your leaders set a tone is the way that we generally are affected and react to it. You know, if the leader says, look, leave Dodge right now, there's a hurricane coming your way, well, you leave. If the leader says, or the weather person says, well, it's going to be a little bit of rain, but don't worry, it's not going to be a deluge, well, then you stay in your homes, don't you? So they set the tone. And did they set it too high or too low? 08085 909693. I would like you to reflect on that time. If you've got a moment or two, reflect back to particularly the beginning. What was the tone that the government set? Was it the right tone, or was it slightly, well, understated, overstated? Colin in Stockport, who survived COVID, had this to say.
Everyone was dealing with the unknown then, because nobody actually knew, you know, Boris was like, stay at home, you know, you might spread the disease. I don't, in hindsight, you know, Chris Whitty and all the other people just didn't know what they were dealing with, although it affected me quite a lot. Don't blame them.
Yeah, Colin in Stockport there. How about you? Did the government get the tone right? Or did they, for you, on reflection, overstate the severity or understate it? 08085 909693. Also tonight at the nightclub, we've seen this tragic story of the death of a mum of five, thought to have had a non-surgical cosmetic procedure. It's thought to be the first case of its kind in the UK, and two people have been arrested on suspicion of manslaughter. It's a very sad case, and one that raises the subject of cosmetic treatments. Anecdotally, more people seem to be having cosmetic procedures of one form or another nowadays. Have you? 08085 909693. Whether it be for more surgical or medical reasons or not, have you had cosmetic surgery? Talk to me. 08085 909693. If you can, talk me through the procedure itself, but also the impact of it. So I imagine if it's a visible cosmetic surgery, there will be a reaction from people who maybe saw you before that and will recognise immediately that you've undergone something, for better or worse. 08085 909693. And what was the reason why you went for the cosmetic surgery option, or did you not have an option in that case? Matthew in March shared his experience of having a nose job after breaking his nose 8 times.
It was a real mess, and sure, I basically couldn't breathe through it anymore. So it was really the reconstructive surgery, they called it. Yeah, you know, they went in, they broke everything up, they took a load of bone out, they cleaned everything out, and they built the nose back up to look like some photographs that my parents gave them. So my nose was basically the same as I had before. It was basically starting from square one again.
And Yvonne in Ipswich shared why she chose to get a rhinoplasty when she was a teenager.
I think I wanted to go into fashion and be a fashion model, and I was heavily into clothes and buying clothes and makeup and stuff like that. I really regret it though.
Yeah.
If I could have my old nose back and not do it. Not have gone through it. It's something you do younger. I suppose you take drugs or you take alcohol, and I took rhinoplasty.
Yeah, what about you? 08085 909693. She regretted it. She regretted it. You heard Yvonne there. Regretting it. On reflection, she wishes she had her own nose back. And, well, that might be the reaction of some of you, but other people say, well, No regrets. It was the right thing to do. Talk to me. 0808 590 9693. I'm not, certainly not here to judge anybody. I'm more interested in the procedure and the reasons and the reactions of people to your surgery. So there's a lot to talk about. You can engage in any of the topics we're talking about tonight. If you're a member of a club over and above the nightclub, of which you are, of course, an esteemed member, and dare I say, you're one of the founding members of this nightclub. In years to come, you'll be able to look proudly and say, I was a founding member of the nightclub. And I hope that will be something to, you know, aspire to. That moment when you get to say, I was a founding member of the nightclub. That's right. We, you and I, are founding members of this nightclub. But apart from this nightclub, are you a member of any other club? Maybe it's just simply a social group, because, you know, what is a club? Group of people meet, breakfast club? Yeah, that's a club. That's a club. And whatever the club or the social gathering might be, talk to me. What do you do? Why do you do it? And why is it important to you? 0808 590 9693. And yes, in case you're wondering, I do like a lot of chocolate on my biscuit. Yeah. one or two of you might get that one. But it's from the Dark Ages, I warn you. Anyway, going back to callers tonight, we've got Matt in North Shields. We've got Irv in Camborne in West Cornwall. So bear with me, Irv. Let's speak to Matt first. Hello, Matt.
Hi. If you like a lot of chocolate on your biscuit, join our club.
You are from the Dark Ages, aren't you? You and I are from the Dark Ages.
From the 80s, yeah.
Just checking that you're awake. But I do like a lot of chocolate on my biscuit, actually. So it echoed what I wanted to say, you know. Thank you.
I'm trying to lighten the atmosphere a bit. It's getting a bit stuffy in the nightclub tonight. It's getting a bit heavy, you know. Some of these subjects are a bit serious, darling.
It's getting a bit real. It's getting a bit real, I'll give you that.
I wouldn't say I'm quite
stuffy. Sometimes you got to be real, you know. But we can mix real with reality, you know. We can mix it.
Yeah, the real world is kind of heavy, you know.
I suppose the point I wanted to make was
you're talking about clubs. The club I belong to, I go out with on a Thursday night. I only work Monday to Thursday, and on a Thursday night, I go out for my band practice, and then I go to the pub after with these older boys. I'm 48, they're all 60, but we're called Filth, and you had us in your imaginary festival. Do you remember you had a festival going on?
Yeah, and your band Filth is on the lineup, as I recall.
Yeah, we were in one of the outline stages because you'd worked out that we were controversial.
Yeah,
you can't
be on the pyramid stage, mate. I mean,
the telly's going to be filming the pyramid stage.
You know, they'll be selling that pyramid stage performances all across the world. The last thing you want is a band called Filth dirtying it up. You get me? Griming it all up. Anyway, now, for real, let's talk now about, we talked about the festival, of course.
Yeah. Yes, of course.
And that's your club as such.
Yeah, and that's the only club I really belong to. I mean, I go to my local and I get out of my missus and we're about to go on holiday and that, so I don't do too badly, but the only club I really belong to is this little gang of blokes where we just sort of like try and jam things out in a workshop because the guitarist has a workshop. He's a sculptor. He's a metalist sculptor. He's a metal sculptor. I don't know how to put it quite rightly.
Yeah, a sculptor
that
works in metalwork. Yeah, I get
it. Yeah, so he owns a workshop, so we practice in there. So every Thursday, we get in, not tonight, because I'm ill. I don't know if you can hear, but I'm a bit stuffy. I've got, like, some kind of infection. I didn't want to infect the old boys because they might die.
You did
say...
It
could be COVID or something.
Yeah, of course. You did say that it was a bit stuffy in the nightclub. You're the stuffy one. You're the one who's brought the stuffiness in.
No.
You did. You're the only one who's stuffy.
I've just been listening like a faithful listener, just like hoping, oh, maybe if I can't have Roll Out the Barrel, maybe somebody else can. Because this is about the fifth time I've called in, so I know there's no chance of me getting it, but, you know, I like to hear other people getting it.
Why is it important to be part of your club, your Filth club?
Oh, just because, like, I get creative expression because I get to play the keyboard. So I get to put something out there creatively. And we do have the odd little gig. Nothing major, just small gigs in bars and that. But also I get to hang out with some people in the pub. And it's a bit collective. It's a bit like a little gang because even though they're all about 60 apart from me, there's three of them, they're all about 60 apart from me. But there's something collective about it, some kind of unified force where we all come together and we have that one string in common, and it's not just like a bunch of guys that we in the pub, if you see what I mean. Sorry.
I do see what you mean. You cough away because it's all right. You won't affect me down the line. I'm a distance away from you. But I do see what you mean, mate. And I know as well, even though you somewhat dismissively say, like, every now and then we have a gig, but I imagine that those gigs make it all worthwhile, that there's a certain amount of elation you get even in those gigs that, you know, may not be Wembley Arena with Oasis, but nevertheless means a lot to you.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, you're right. And it means a lot when, like, my girlfriend brings her family and some people turn up and, like, you're playing to a little crowd. And they get into it, especially if people dance, you know, and then you're away, aren't you? You're happy, you know.
Yeah, that's every musician's hope, is that people are dancing. So every songwriter's hope, you know. Even though it's a ballad, even though you're writing a ballad, you're composing a ballad, they would like people to be more engaged than just sitting down and listening, unless, you know, they're classical composers. Oh, you want to take care of that cough?
I would go as far as to say that if you're writing a ballad, what you really want is for the lovers to dance. Surely, if you are in a ballad, you want the couples to get up and have a dance, don't you?
Nobody dances like that anymore, mate. I mean, you really are from the dark ages. If you think people turn the lights down low on a public dance floor and then hug up their partners, you know, nice and close and smoochy and sexually healing, as Marvin Gaye would say. Nobody dances like that anymore. There were good days when we used to dance like that, you know. We used to have some proper rub-up-the-wallpaper fun, and you know it. You know it. Because you're from the dark ages just like me, and we love a lot of chocolate on our biscuit. Matt, thank you, from North Shields. Irv in Camborne. Hello, my Irv. How are you?
Hello, man. All right.
God, I gave you a big big up. I gave you a huge big up, and all you can say is, no, I'm all right, man. Yeah, all right.
No, I'm asking you if you're all right.
I know you are. But I thought you'd at least sing it to me. If me and you have been through things and times, you know, I thought you'd say, are you all right, man?
Yeah, okay, all right. I'm not really willing to do a Paul Rogers impression at the moment.
Why not? When your girl came all the way over from New Zealand, wasn't I prepared to embarrass myself, or as we say in some parts of West Africa, embalass myself just to benefit your girl from New Zealand to put a smile on her face for you? I was willing. I was willing to embalass myself. You know that.
Well, she's coming over next March. So.
Oh, wow. Oh, my goodness. She's coming over again?
Yeah.
Halfway around the world?
She's got dual nationality anyway. So
sure, but halfway around the world, mate. Does she go east or does she go west to come over?
This is interesting. She doesn't like going to LA, so she comes the other way.
She goes west. She heads west.
I've got to think about this.
What do you mean? You were a merchant seaman. Irving, you can't be doing this not knowing your north, your south, your east and west. You were a merchant seaman. You've sailed all around the world. North, point upwards.
She goes west. She goes west.
That's what I said. Oh, my goodness. Right, we're back on terra firma, you and I, or on the high seas, it may be, but it's always a pleasure. I've got a smile on my face because now we know our east from our west. Let's remember the pandemic, though, from a few years ago.
Well, I think it's one of those things. I don't think it's handled right in the first place. I think it is a case of German warfare. As far as I know, I don't think Beijing likes that part of China anyway. anyway, it happened. And I think really at the time they should have shut down any flights coming from that part of the world into Europe and the United States and Australasia, but they didn't. And it got out. And funny enough, I never had a vaccination myself against it. And I didn't get it. And I think in the town that I live in, it took out a couple of people. They passed away. But other than that, no thing really about it. But I don't think it was managed right from the onset, really. But
from what you're saying, the government underplayed it. Otherwise, if they had seen how severe it was, they'd have probably shut down the airports a lot sooner, etc. So if you're saying that the government underplayed it, is that the reason why you didn't go and get a jab? Because I imagine if they said, look, if you don't have this jab, you are going to die, I imagine you would have gone and got the jab. Yeah?
Well, it's my choice.
Oh, yeah, but the choice is live or die. Remember,
well,
that's
does the vaccination consist of sort of almost lightly infecting you so you build up antibodies to fight it? You know, I didn't trust it really, and it's my choice, and I've been fine ever since.
But the point I'm saying, well done, you're fine. Many others didn't survive it, as you know, and that's why I'm trying to get to the bottom of whether the government should have been more forceful about telling us to take precautions, to socially distance, to shutting down the borders, etc., or whether the government were already too forceful and, you know, they panicked us into thinking it was severe when it wasn't severe. And the reason we're talking about that, as I've said earlier on, Irvin, is because of the comments from the chief medical officer. He has to sort of think about that of a night time, and he's not quite sure which it is. Are you? Any thoughts?
Well, my own belief is really it's a nasty old affair anyway. And when they faced up to it, I think it was too late. You know, the cat was out of the bag, so to speak. But, you know, that's that.
Yeah. Cap certainly out of the bag. Irvin, thank you. Appreciate that. 0808 590 9693. Tell me this. Same question I was asking Irvin there. If you didn't take the vaccine, would you have taken it if the government was more forceful? I think that's another way of getting to the bottom of this, whether the government underplayed or overplayed the severity of COVID. If they'd been more forceful, would you have rushed to go and get the vaccine like everybody else? And maybe if you took the vaccine, did the government scare you into taking the vaccine, which would suggest that they were perhaps forceful and maybe even too forceful? Yeah, if you fancy answering it that way, I'm happy to take your call. 0808 590 9693. We've got Rob with us in Birmingham. Hello, Rob. How are you?
You all right, my man?
Yeah, very well. Thank you very much. Okay, you go on. Tell us the story of why you ended up having cosmetic surgery.
Right. Well, what it was a good few years ago now. It was Christmas night. I got a bit drunk, and I ended up having a fight. And I'd part my nose bit off. Probably about the size of your little fingernail, about that much was missing. I knew I'd had a fight, but in the morning, like, I made it home. In the morning, like, when I woke up, and I had to peel the pillowcase off my face, which hurt bad. and I looked in the mirror, and I thought, oh my God. nicely. I cleaned it up and whatever, and I thought, I'll go get something done about this, but I left it, and I left it, and I left it, because I was scared about getting it done and whatever. And, you know, after 2 or 3 years of the jokes, thought, you know, oh, well, you've been on the coke and sniffing this and whatever, and it took your nose away and all that jokes, it's got to be too much. So I thought, you know, I've got to do something about it. So I went to a doctor's and ended up having rhino surgery on it, rhinoplasty, which is a nose job, basically. And I mean, I've had my nose broken a few times anyway, so it was bent and whatever. So at the same time, they strained it out and they cut my nose and folded the skin over and, like, covered this hole, this piece that was missing, basically. And I'm glad I had it done, because I was scared about having it done, I mean, and whatever, but, you know, the joke just got too much, and so like I say, I had it done, and nothing. I wish I would have had it done a lot earlier.
What did the jokers make of it when after you'd had it done?
Sorry, what was that? Because you're really quiet.
Sorry, what did the jokers make of your new nose? You know, the one that they were winding you up about, saying that you'd had too much coke up it. What did they make of the new nose when you emerged?
Well, it was about time you had it done, you looked bad and whatever. You know, you look much better with it done like that. That was about it, really, you know.
Yeah, but was it worth it then? Because you went and got a nose job just because people were making jokes about your nose.
Well, there was a piece missing, you know. It did look bad.
Yeah, I know it looked bad, but you can get used to it, can't you? But I'm fair enough if you choose to go of your own free will to have a nose job, fair enough. But if it's because everybody's asking, yeah, look at your nose, yeah, you just think, well, people make those kind of comments, whatever, even if you've got a perfect nose, they'll be going, yeah, look at your nose, yeah. And you think, well, you can't just go and change your looks for those haters, as we call them nowadays, you know what I mean?
Well, I do, but, I mean, it did need it doing anyway, because it looked horrible. I mean, if you can imagine, you know, you could see inside my nose, you know, you could see inside my nose.
Mate, I can imagine, although I can't imagine being in that situation. Have you learnt your lesson, or are you still a bit of a scrapper?
Oh, no. What it was I was an alcoholic, but I stopped and I just had a bit of a blip. I drunk a litre of bottle of vodka, so I didn't really remember much about it until, like, you know, you piece it together kind of thing.
Rob, listen, that's good. I mean, you were an alcoholic. If this nose job has been part of what has helped you recover, well, bring it on, mate. I would definitely have a nose job under those circumstances if I believe that, well, having it could maybe chase away my demons and stuff. Rob, you're a star. Thank you for telling us about it. Make sure you call me another time, though. Let's make it a regular thing. Thomas is with us in Belfast. Hello, Thomas. How are you?
Good morning, Dutton. How are you keeping?
I'm very well, Thomas. How are you keeping?
I'm all right. I'm up having a snack in the middle of the night, so I am.
Well, me too, actually. Mine's a salad snack. It's unusual. But, you know, for once, I just thought, let me try this salad thing that my missus keeps going on about, that, you know, a man of my age should be eating on a regular. And you know what? It's green. There's a little bit of orange in it. Oh, that's carrot, is it? Okay. And a little bit of purple. It's not bad. Honestly, it's not bad. It's not as bad as you think it would be at this time of night, when actually your body's crying out for something unhealthy with a lot of sugar in it, you know? Salad's not...
I have went, Dutton, half two in the morning, for the traditional Ulster fry, which is a heart attack on a plate.
Mate, just have your mobile phone with you. I mean, it's heart attack's not a jokey business. So if you're having it, make sure you call the emergency service.
This time of year, but if I have that even now, I'm not hungry till maybe 5 o'clock at night because it's real sticks to your belly like lead.
Well, anyway, you carry on.
I have a very interesting club and society I have been running for 25 years, Doc.
Oh, now I'm all ears. Okay, because we've been asking for your clubs. Yeah, what club are you a member of? What's the club?
I organise the Titanic Schools Project, and I use the phenomena or the legend to reach back to small kids to teach them science, technology, engineering and mathematics. And I have spoken to 17,000 kids since 2000 doing that. I'm an engineer in my daytime job, and the kids just go, Titanic, you know. And then you teach them about the science behind the, you know, how could an iceberg put a hole in a ship made of steel? And all these sort of things, and the legends and the myths. And I call the kids Titanoracs. They just go nuts. They dress up as shipyard workers. They dress up as first-class passengers. They build models. At the end of the school term, there's usually a very discreet van pulls up to the school and takes all the models in the back of the van to the model museum. I can't tell you where it is, Dalton, like, but the kids are like, oh, some of these models are, I'll let you into one occasion, the model that the kids had built as a class was so big, we had to get a bread knife from the canteen and cut it into five sections to get it into the back of the van.
Impressive.
Because the kids just go daft.
I understand why you are immersed, if I can use that without punning, immersed in the subject of the Titanic. But why? How can you explain the continued interest from children 100 years and more, and now we're up to 113 years, aren't we, since the Titanic sank? Why the enduring interest and fascination?
I look at it, well, I think the movie and Leonardo DiCaprio, like, see in Belfast, Dalton, and I'm fifth-generation shipyard worker, 8 members of my family involved in the construction of the Titanic. But see until the movie with Leonardo DiCaprio and Belfast Shipyard, Titanic, they were ashamed of it. It was never mentioned. But when the movie came out, people went, oh. And I promoted to the kids. I can't tell you what. Well, every child in Northern Ireland studies Titanic for 5 or 6 weeks in primary school under the world around us. So they're fascinated about it.
Didn't know that. That's interesting because for us, I think for my generation, it wasn't that we studied it at school so much, but, you know, for a generation of kids that grew up in the 60s and 70s, as I did, the Titanic's name it's like one of those iconic names that says so much in our imaginations.
It was a tragedy, Dalton.
It was. But it was, and this is an odd thing to say about tragedy, but it was a tragedy, you know, it was the perfect tragedy, if you like, for a continuing story. to be remembered, because it was an iceberg. It was a ship that was supposed to be indestructible. It was built in Belfast. It did have, you know, all social classes aboard it. And, you know, the band did play, apparently, whilst it sank, you know, to the last tuba or whatever. And there was a host of people who survived. Otherwise, we wouldn't know the story, would we? We wouldn't know the story so vividly of the Titanic if there hadn't been, you know, the women and children first. And who else could have the power to get onto those lifeboats? It is a perfect tragedy in that sense. Sorry, yeah, go on.
Sorry, Don. I have different strands. Obviously, I'm an engineer, and we can't get kids interested, and they'll want to be digital influencers and all. But it's a great way of getting them interested in big chunks of steel plates and rivets, and the dress up, and they do a reenactment of how to work as a team. Putting rivets through the holes and make sure they don't hit my hand with a sledgehammer. I've got mock sledgehammers and all. And they just like the hands-on thing, and like the era. It's an era of conflict. The, you know, technology in the iceberg, the unsinkable ship and the captain who sailed into an ice field in the fog. There's a music that you're very good, Dalton.
I try.
And even in Belfast, a trick question.
Yeah.
The Titanic was not built in Northern Ireland. It was built in Ireland because Northern Ireland didn't exist.
Oh! Thank you.
Yeah.
I should have said it was built in Belfast. That would have got me out of that one, shouldn't I? Do you know what I mean?
But the kids panic. And these are kids that are the direct descendants of the guys that built the Titanic, and some of them, my great great-grandfather was killed in the shipyard. That's the inspiration for all the work I've done with the kids over the year. Yeah. He was killed 100 years ago this year in the shipyard, and him and his brother were the top plating squad on the construction of the Titanic. And I have all the obituaries and the newspaper clippings and the medals for the best plating squad at the time of Titanic is in my family. And
Thomas,
great history.
You've got an amazing...
One last word, Don.
Go on.
Don, the purpose of history is not to eulogise the dead. It is to inspire the living. And that's what the Titanic School Project does.
Well done. And on behalf of us all, well done, mate, because you're keeping that story alive. And I fear that even though this is the first time we've spoken, Thomas... I believe, anyway, that I'm going to have to hold the rolling out of the barrel for another occasion, because you've left us on such a, you know, inspirational note. Remind me next time to roll out the barrel, anytime you like. Time now is 2:37.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
BBC News on 5 Live. World leaders are continuing to pressure Israel to negotiate a ceasefire with Hezbollah at the UN General Assembly in New York. But the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has said the IDF will keep hitting Hezbollah with what he called full force. During his address to the Assembly, Keir Starmer called for an immediate ceasefire in southern Lebanon. The US Vice President and Democratic presidential nominee Kamala Harris has promised unwavering support for Ukraine after meeting President Zelensky in Washington earlier. Mr. Zelensky also met President Biden, who unveiled more military aid. A charity has said that there's been a significant increase in the number of older people in England not getting the social care they need. Age UK's analysis found 2 million people over the age of 65 didn't get enough help with daily tasks like washing, dressing and going to the bathroom, up from 1.6 million in 2023. The report says it's due to cuts and long NHS waiting lists. The government say that they've committed to creating a high-quality national care service. And a year to the day since the sycamore gap tree in Northumberland was felled, the National Trust is offering communities across the UK the chance to request 49 of its saplings. Some have already been promised to sites. One sapling will go to Tina's Haven at Easington in County Durham, a nature sanctuary created to help mothers with addiction after the death of a 35-year-old woman. Let's get the Five Live Sport now.
This is all smoke and mirrors. That's sales.
On BBC iPlayer.
What have you got to offer me?
Look, this is in all of our interests, right?
The new series of Industry.
I'm so glad you came.
Starring Kit Harington.
I'm an investment banker. Did you invite me here to watch you eat?
No, I invited you here to seduce you.
I've never met anyone with a bigger blind spot.
All's fair in love and war, right?
I needed my friend and you used me.
Industry.
Now, we go to work.
Starts Tuesday on BBC iPlayer.
In football, 10-man Tottenham beat the Azerbaijani side Karabakh 3-0 in their opening game of this season's Europa League. Spurs had defender Radu Dragosin sent off in the opening 10 minutes, but goals from Brennan Johnson, Pap Mates Sarr and Dominic Solanke were enough for victory. Elsewhere, Rangers were 2-0 winners at Malmo in their league stage opener in Sweden. Nedim Bajrami and Ross McCausland got the goals for Philippe Clement's side. Celtic are the first Scottish side to qualify for the Women's Champions League group stages since it was introduced in the 2020-21 season. A 2-0 win on the night and a 3-0 aggregate victory over the Ukrainian side Vorskla Poltava was enough for Celtic to go through. Manchester City and Arsenal also progressed to the group stage. The Gunners overturned a 1-0 first leg deficit to beat the Swedish side Häcken 4-1 on aggregate, while City picked up a 3-0 victory against Paris FC to win the tie 8-0 over two legs. In cricket, the pace bowler Josh Hull has been ruled out of England's tour of Pakistan next month with a quad injury. England have opted not to call up a replacement. England's white ball side face Australia in the fourth one-day international at Lord's later on Friday. And the RB Formula One team has confirmed that they're dropping Australian driver Daniel Ricciardo for the final six races of the season. He'll be replaced by the New Zealander Liam Lawson. Ricciardo's future had been in doubt for much of the season, and if this is to be his exit from F1, he bows out with 8 Grand Prix wins and having made the podium 32 times.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of the UK.
On digital radio.
On BBC Sounds.
And ask your smart speaker to play BBC Radio 5 Live. Dotun Adebayo. BBC Radio 5 Live.
Yeah, we were speaking to Thomas in Belfast before the 2:30 news, or the 2:37 news, as it ended up being, and he was telling us about the proud history of the Belfast shipyards that built the Titanic, amongst other things. He's an engineer, and he is part of a club that encourages younger people, or at least inspires younger people, to learn about the story of the Titanic, inspired by the movie, no less, with Leonardo DiCaprio. Anyway, so we were asking you if you are a member of any club, apart from the nightclub, obviously, and what's the reason why you're a member of the nightclub, the club that you're a member of, and what do you get out of it? Adam in Comrie says, Dotto, I'm a proud member of the Monday Club. I'm presuming it's not the conservative Monday Club, as it once was, with railway modeller Jenny Kirk. Well, then it definitely isn't that Monday Club. Jenny Kirk started the YouTube Club before the pandemic. We remember the night of the lockdown, but never missed a Monday Club, and it's still going. We kept each other going and informed. Jenny and Zoe made sure we knew where Monday was. We've seen some of the most fantastic modelling and up to date with the modelling world news as well. Adam, thank you very much. And then I get Chris and Devon paraphrasing Groucho as in Marx. Oh, I'm going to do it in the Groucho Marx voice. I wouldn't want to be a member of a club who had me as a member. something like that. Anyway, that was Groucho Marx as impersonated by some Nigerian kid who once upon a time used to walk around school half bent over and pretending he was smoking a cigar. Don't know who he is, don't know what happened to him, but yeah. Thank you, appreciate that. Let's get back to your calls, 0808 590 9693. Amongst other things, we're talking about cosmetic surgery. And we've got Karen with us in Carlisle. Hello, Karen.
Hello.
Really appreciate your call.
Oh, that's fine.
Should we get through the protocol first? As a first-time caller, we genuinely embrace you as a member of the nightclub.
And I don't know.
Ah, you've heard. So you know what's coming, do you?
Yeah.
I'm glad you know, because it takes some people by surprise. But this is, we mean this, heartfelt.
Roll out the barrel. We'll have a barrel of fun. Roll out the barrel. We've got the blues on the run.
Yeah, it's not always a barrel of laughs, particularly when there are serious topics. I'm so glad you, I mean, genuinely, I'm so glad, Karen. But it's a story, your daughter's journey. Tell me, what happened to your daughter?
Well, I became pregnant and it wasn't found on the baby scan. And she was stuck in delivery for 19 hours. Coming out face first at the cold brow presentation, and we nearly weren't here. And a 19-hour labour and then an emergency section. Anyway, our skull was all deformed, long, elongated, and hooked at the front and the back. And you could see all the ridgy bone, 8 sections on a skull. And I know that from all my studies and my qualifications. She went on up to 18 months and she was seriously ill. Nobody believed me. And it took a locum doctor to come out and we were sent to Alderhay Hospital, Children's Hospital in Liverpool.
Yeah.
Within half an hour, she was diagnosed with epilepsy and with a very rare genetic chromosomal disorder called scaphocephaly. Now, a lot of people have heard of hydrocephalus, which is water on the brain, and it's rectified by putting a shunt in to the brain, down to the stomach to drain the fluid off. Scaphocephaly is air. The brain swells for no reason and they don't know why. The only way to correct it is to basically take the whole head and face apart and rebuild it all around the brain. It's major.
That sounds like a serious procedure.
Yeah. She had 8 surgeons working on her. Neurologist, maxofacial, that's the people that, like, broke a jaw. They took a jaw away from her skull to break her skull up. There was another doctor who severed all the nerves in her scalp and her skull because you've got the main nerve going across the top. And the way they cut them from ear in big zigzags, from ear to ear. Take the face down and part of the back of the head. It is major. There was a whole team of 8 doctors, surgeons working on her. And she was in theatre a very, very, very long time. They told me they were going to have to risk her life to save her life. And she probably wouldn't come out of surgery. They also told me if they did get her through surgery and there was no bleeding because so many nerves and veins and arteries, you'll know. Infection was a big problem. Bleeding out was another problem. It was just, I haven't got the words. They told me she wouldn't live past 6-year-old because of it. She's 26 next week. The first lot of surgery, before that, they have to have what they call intracranial pressure monitoring. They put an electrical bolt down into the frontal lobe, into the brain, and the wire comes down and in and out the side of the head, and it's wired up to a computer, and they measure the pressure in the brain to see how much the air's going because the brain just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And they explained to me, if you can imagine a balloon inside a brick box with a pump and you keep pumping it and pumping it and pumping it, eventually it just explodes. It's horrendous. So the only thing they could do was basically rebuild all the skull and everywhere around the brain. It didn't work the first time, and the bones started trying to retract back to the original position where they were. So it caused major problems. 6 months later, she had to go through more radical surgery, and what they did, they honestly said to me, we don't know what we're going to do, Karen. And these are top surgeons, the best of the best. Paul May was from Canada. The team, I can't remember everybody's name, sorry. There were so many of them. They said they were going to try and do what they call make windows. So I'm thinking, make windows. Anyway, the gist of it is they cut two squares out the top of a skull and they cut two squares out of the side of a head by a parietal, I can't say it, bones above her ear. So if the air started again and her brain swelled again, she had some chance of surviving. And they covered it with a mesh, which they said eventually would all settle in and be sturdy enough for her to try and live a normal life. Before that, after her first surgery, she had to wear a special helmet at school. It was quite a journey for both of us.
Of course, yeah.
She's so brave and so strong and so amazing. And the poor child had to live with three different faces. The one she was born with up until the surgery. Then she changed after the next surgery. And then she changed again after the second surgery. How'd you cope with that? But she did, she has. And she's absolutely beautiful.
Of course, yeah.
I'm a hair specialist. And I managed to cover all the scars because she's got great big zigzags going from ear to ear up and over the top of her head. And obviously, where they've gone in the frontal lobe, to do the pressure monitoring. She's had that done about 7 times. And they said to me, look, she might have brain damage, the scarring from, you know, the ICP monitoring procedures. Mm-hmm. She's brilliant. She's absolutely amazing. She can't work, obviously, because she still gets headaches now. And every time there's headaches, we worry, obviously. Physically, she manages. She gets tired a lot. She gets headaches. She's an inspiration.
Yeah, she is. I mean, you're an inspiration as well, you know, Karen. So it's a joint effort. And as you were speaking, I wondered who inspires who first. You know, you, I imagine, as the mother, would be the inspiration, particularly as she was so young when she was going through that surgery.
I'm a hair specialist, a skin and hair specialist, and she used to sit and tell the nurses and everybody, I'm having my hair done, and she was sitting with the brain monitoring. She'd no idea what was going on, God love her, sitting there wide awake with this bolt in her brain, and I'm like, look at you.
Well,
just
kids.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Absolutely. They're so resilient. Honestly, I know people say it, but until you're actually there and you're doing it, you don't realise how resilient they are. I was in absolute pieces. And she's sitting there, I'm getting my hair done, look. And she's sitting with this bolt in her brain while you're up to this machine with all this. Oh, honestly, yeah. I mean,
she gets it from you, though, doesn't she?
Yeah, she does, yeah.
Yeah, because I can hear, even in your laughter when I played the roll out of the barrel, I could hear, and I knew that you were going to talk about something very serious that your daughter had been through, but you're full of so much joy. I was proud to play that for you. Your daughter...
I owe those guys my life. I can't thank them enough.
Course,
I really can't.
Of course.
She's a walking miracle.
Sure. And she's come to terms, I imagine, as well, with her journey.
Yeah, she has. She does have a bit of PTSD. I mean, understandably, you can't go through all that. We spent 19 years going back and forward to Alderhay, and me living down there, that was my second home. And it was difficult. But she just takes it all in the stride as if, oh, well, you know, but that's how I am. And she's got that quality from me. And I'm so glad she has.
I'm sure everybody listening would love to hear more of her story. But then it's down to you and her, maybe together or maybe individually, to tell that story and take us on that journey. And I've got the perfect title for your book.
I've just said to your colleague, I would like to write a book. But the thing is, Dutton, I don't really know how to say this. I've got advanced invasive cancer. I've just had surgery 2 weeks ago. And I'll start radiotherapy the day after Faye's birthday next week.
Oh.
And I'm too ill for chemo, so I don't know what's going to happen. We're having a bit of a nightmare at the moment.
Sure, you've been through a nightmare. And hopefully
and I'm faced with another one.
Hopefully.
Well, I'm trying my best. And I'm not going down without a fight.
No chance. No. Well, please keep us informed. I genuinely want you to know that you've got the support of all of us.
That means a lot.
You expressed your daughter's challenge so beautifully when you said, you know,
she's amazing. She's my inspiration.
But she's had three faces.
Fantastic.
She's had three faces. The book's got to be called The Girl with Three Faces. It's got to be called that. And if you can put it together, you've sold a copy to me already.
Okay. I've been wanting to do it, Monty. Sorry, Dutton.
No, I'll take Monty.
Don't know where that came from.
No, I'll take Monty.
That came out wrong.
Of a generation, Monty Modlin was the only Monty we knew, apart from General Montgomery, and that was his nickname.
Do you know what that is, Dutton? It's a complication I'm on. It gets me a little bit confused sometimes.
Honestly, that's
so
not
true. So to relay what I just have, I've done okay. She's a walking miracle. She's absolutely amazing, and she's so pretty.
Yeah.
They've given her a forehead and everything. She also had to have, I was telling a colleague, she'd have nose, ear and throat surgery. Her breathing tubes were only the width of a pinhead. She used to stop breathing every night. I was absolutely panic-stricken, and I had to get her breathing again. It's just been horrendous.
There's another thing that we should all remember, and this is people of faith or people of no faith. Life, or if you prefer, you know, the...
It's so precious.
Yeah, it is
it's
precious.
It's a gift, it really is.
It is. It's either life or the maker, however you want to see it, never gives us more than we can bear. Do you know
that's
what I mean?
Someone keep, I know exactly. I do believe it's true. And I also do believe that's why Faye was put with me. And the weirdest thing, and this might sound insane, and it's not, I had quite a few miscarriages, Dutton. And I had to have surgery on my cervix. And they said to me, you'll get pregnant, Karen, but you won't carry your baby. Now, I used to pray for another child. And Faye came, and do you know what the doctor said to me?
What?
The only reason you carried her, Karen, is because her head was deformed and it was boat-shaped. If she'd had a normal, round head like a baby, like a football, you would have lost her. There's something in it. There really is.
Yeah, and, you know, it's a funny thing. I'm not making a comparison, but when you explained about her elongated head, I remembered my second daughter, because she was brought out, it was like camera lights action. She was brought out with what they call a Vantusen, I think it is.
So her
head was somewhat elongated, and, she wasn't in any way, different or, you know, that wasn't, she didn't need operations to sort it out. Eventually the head reformed, as it were, but during that period, my wife refused to allow anybody to take any photographs of her. So we just don't have any pictures of that stage, you know, but, and we talk to her now about the elongated head, and, her older sister says, yeah, that's because you were adopted. And you've got to find some kind of humour to try and bring it across to people.
Talking of humour.
Yeah.
Faye found a photograph. It was a couple of days ago, and she was showing her granddad. After she'd had her first surgery, her head was about 3 times the width of a normal head. She was black and blue down to her neck, and she couldn't even open her eyes. And do you know, Dutton, she was still smiling.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
and she went, we went in, there was like a jacuzzi bath, and she tipped a full bottle of bubble bath in it because she couldn't see. She dropped it. And I've got this picture of her, and she's just sitting in this big, massive bath with all these bubbles, and all you can sort of see is like her little tiny eyes and her nose and her mouth, and she's smiling, and I'm like, you're just beyond amazing, you are, child. You really are brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
You've gone through that, and you're sitting smiling.
And you deserve a brilliant child, Karen, for what you've gone through as well. Absolutely brilliant to hear that you're looking at it positively. Let's stay strong with your diagnosis as well, because you certainly need, you know, your daughter needs you and you need her. But thank you for sharing that story. Absolutely amazing story. Karen in Carlisle, well done there. Denise in Anglesey and Joe in Watford, I'll come to you straight after the 3 o'clock news. 0808 590 9693. Every call tells a story, and you heard what I mean.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
BBC News at 3 o'clock, this is Justine Green. Sir Keir Starmer has added his voice to international calls for Israel and the Lebanese militant group Hezbollah to agree a ceasefire. In his first address as Prime Minister to the UN General Assembly, Sir Keir said it was vital for both sides to step back from the brink. The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu addresses the Assembly later today, but has already rejected a proposal for a truce from France and the US. President Zelensky has outlined his plans for victory against Russia in a meeting with Joe Biden at the White House. Mr. Biden said Russia wouldn't prevail and pledged more military aid. The Ukrainian leader then met the US vice president and Democratic presidential nominee Kamala Harris. She insisted it was vital to stand up to the Russian leader.
Putin's aggression is not only an attack on the people of Ukraine. It is also an attack on fundamental principles such as sovereignty and territorial integrity. History has shown us if we allow aggressors like Putin to take land with impunity, they keep going.
The Treasury is reconsidering Labour's manifesto plan to further tighten rules on non-dom tax status, which were scrapped by the last Conservative government. BBC News understands there are concerns about how much money would be raised if wealthy foreigners left the UK. The First Minister of Northern Ireland, Michelle O'Neill, the first Irish nationalist to take on the role, will give her speech at the Sinn Féin conference this evening. The party is holding its annual gathering in the Irish Republic. Our Ireland correspondent Chris Page reports.
Sinn Féin is going into its conference after a historic third election success in Northern Ireland. It won the most seats in the devolved assembly in 2022 and became the largest party in councils a year later. Then, 3 months ago, it secured more Westminster seats than any other local party. Tonight will mark another significant moment. Michelle O'Neill will address the annual gathering, known as the Ardèche, for the first time as Stormont First Minister. She's likely to call for Westminster to give more funding to the devolved administration and to set out terms for a potential referendum on Irish unity.
Football, Tottenham Hotspur have begun their Europa League campaign with a 3-0 win at home against the Azerbaijani side Karabag.